Lina and friends, we're glad to be here, all of us, and to partake of the hospitality of Lina's house. It's a beautiful day outside, a little windy, brisk. Look at the sky and you wonder what we can do to have our own minds as clear as that sky is. We will consider tonight, friends, some teachings and ideas connected with the winter solstice. All over the world, as far back as we know, in the night of time, there have been these celebrations, festivities, rites connected with the winter solstice. All over the world and among all the races of people, both the winter and summer solstice and the two equinoxes of spring and autumn have been greatly revered as sacred points in the compass of the year, and have been connected with profound symbolism in many rites and ceremonies, and are all based on very ancient traditions, particularly the winter solstice, which has been from time immemorial considered to be the period of the birth of divine beings, the birth of gods, the appearance of initiates, masters of life, actually the appearance of divine beings, traditions and symbolism connected with it have always been centered around the winter solstice. And throughout the length and breadth of mankind, we have had these rites celebrated in the dead of winter in connection with spiritual events which traditions have told us about, and which are based on the actual facts of nature. Now, winter solstice as such is only a part of a larger picture. In order to get the more complete picture, you have to think of the four sacred seasons of the year: the winter solstice, the spring equinox, the summer solstice, and the autumnal or fall equinox. A yearly cycle, each one with its own specific meaning, each one different from the others and yet deeply correlated with each other. The symbolism of the four sacred seasons of the year is based primarily on astronomical facts. Astronomical and astrological in a way, but don't read into the term astrological anything that goes by that name today. It's something much more deeper. Now, the simple astronomical fact is, of course, that the motion of the Earth in its orbit around the Sun encounters these four positions, these four main positions, at which time the days are of a certain length and the nights, or they are of equal length. The passage from the winter solstice to the spring equinox, and so on through the summer solstice to the fall equinox, is familiar to most of us. Now, these astronomical symbol, which might be called a cross, a cosmic cross, the intersecting line of the solstices and equinoxes. That symbolism is reflected in our daily life, in the life of the 24 hours, if you like, and in the life of the individual throughout his incarnation. Any one of us is passing through four primary or essential stages of development. The first is our birth, our physical birth. The second is adolescence. The third is complete and full manhood or womanhood in its full sway. The individual is in full possession of all he will be in this particular life, great or small. He has achieved the highest point of his personal development, and after a while will begin gradually to decline into old age, and the fourth stage and final for this incarnation is his passing. Followed, of course, as far as the theosophical philosophy of life is concerned, by many other lives based on the same general pattern. And that general pattern applies to other kingdoms below the human. Now, the fact that we go through these four stages, and the fact that these stages are symbolized by the four sacred seasons of the year, have to do with another extension of the same symbolism. And that is connected with what is generally known as initiations. Now, there's a great deal of misunderstanding about the meaning of that term. Not misunderstandings among students of theosophy, but generally in the world. The word has been used and misused, but essentially what is meant by students of theosophy by the term initiation is something like this, to put it simply. An individual aspiring to the spiritual life, gradually discovering, uncovering within himself great potentials of growth, gradually becoming aware of the great distinction there is between material life and spiritual life, and growing in love for and devotion to spiritual ideals, may go that way through many incarnations, and little by little train himself to a greater knowledge, to the possession of greater knowledge, to the development of greater spiritual powers, and someday, in one or another of his incarnations, will achieve, or rather reach, the point where he makes a final and permanent contact between his personal consciousness and the divinity within himself. Not just an aspiration towards it, not a vague sense of its presence, but a personal, strong, and positive and permanent link forged between his lesser self, the human self, however far advanced it may be, and the inner God. The mystical Christian would have called it, through many a century, would have called it the Christos spirit within man. The Oriental or the Buddhist school would call it the inner Buddha. This is what the ancient Greeks knew as Apollo. That's what the Egyptians meant by Osiris, in many other terms and names. Or, in a descriptive way, the inner God. a higher self, a spiritual divine entity, of which you and I as human beings are only a ray, an emanation, a manifestation, I would say. Now, true initiation is a rite, spelled R-I-T-E, of course, rite, of a spiritual nature concerned with establishing in the ready neophyte, establishing that inner connection. And it is done by, or I should say, under the tutelage and the guidance of very inspired and high teachers in the spiritual knowledge. All through antiquity, as far back as we know, such individuals of high spiritual knowledge have existed among men, and at all times there have been neophytes, aspiring individuals, disciples, ready to undergo through their first initiation. That initiation is usually taken at the winter solstice. So the winter solstice festivities, ceremonies, outer forms, symbolism, which are familiar to us and familiar under other forms in other nations, are merely an echo, you might say, an aspect of a spiritual something that is taking place at those seasons. And that is what I'm trying to point out. The symbolism of the existing religious philosophical schools about it have been based on and have originated from ancient days, before some of the ideas concerning before sacred seasons had been forgotten in the Occidental civilization. Such initiatory rites of the winter solstice and the other sacred seasons exist today. They take place. Certainly they do not take place in the busy marts of men, but in secluded places, both in the Orient and the Occident, and they have to do with the progressive development of the disciple into higher degrees of spiritual knowledge. Now, if you were to ask the question, or wonder in your own mind, as to just exactly what a student of theosophy means by initiation, the answer would be something like this, when stripped of all details. It is the ability which the trained disciple, trained for many lives, the quality, or rather the ability that he develops to withdraw consciously from his physical body and from the more subtle envelopes of the inner man, the pranic, karmic, lower mental and astral sheaths, we might call them, and issue forth as a spiritual ego, as a reincarnating entity that he is and that we are, without loss of self-consciousness. Initiation is a self-conscious process. That, my friends, is something that sounds simple enough, but would be utterly impossible without lives of training. You see what happens to us. We go to sleep, we lose consciousness, self-consciousness for a while. We dream, it's not under our control. We die, we've lost self-consciousness. We can lose self-consciousness during lifetime in various ways. You can lose it through anesthetic, you can lose it by being hit. In all kinds of ways, it is very easy for us to sever the link of self-consciousness and become temporarily, shall we say, entranced. That's what it is. But the individual who can withdraw from his human instruments or apparatus in which he is duly and harmoniously integrated and incarnated without loss of self-consciousness and be able to investigate or learn experimentally in the inner worlds, the structure of nature and the operations of natural law, that individual is something more than just human. He's a human being that has reached the university stage of spiritual development. He's about to graduate from the human school of life. Oh, he does not cease to be human now. But he is as far ahead in knowledge and self-control and possibilities as a great professor of some chemistry or physics or astronomy is when compared with a newly born babe or the individual who comes through the grammar school. He is human, he remains human, but he has learned by the transference of his self-consciousness into the inner worlds what is the actual structure of them, apart from anybody's opinions, theories, hypotheses. He knows it at first hand, experimentally, as much as a professor of chemistry knows what is going to happen to his chemicals in a chemical laboratory. After a while, and maybe a matter of a few days or a few weeks, that individual returns back into his physical body. Now, his physical body in the meantime has been entranced. It is not functioning, but it is very much alive. And it is protected by the government, highly skilled teacher or adept, ready for the incumbent when he returns back from worlds. When he returns successfully, he is not anymore an ordinary neophyte. He is not anymore just an aspiring student, a noble-hearted occultist, a disciple. He is not there anymore. He has become, by means of what he has seen and been through, which includes very severe trials, tremendous tests and trials in the inner world, he has come back as a self-conscious initiate. Is a master of life to that extent. Sure enough, he is a beginner. A beginner in a higher school of evolution than the ordinary human school. But nevertheless, however much of a beginner he may be, by comparison with what he was just a little while ago, he is an initiate. Because he has experienced and he knows, and he can teach not intellectually, not the way we consider the subjects, but he can teach others in a supreme way, in which only very advanced human beings can do. Such initiations take place and at the four sacred seasons of the year. They're not all the same. They do not concern the same type of people. I do not know the details of the subject. The initiatory rites of the winter solstice differ from others, but the general pattern of what we have already spoken of prevails. The neophyte at the winter solstice experiences his birth, that is, his new birth. It is the birth of the inner God into full-fledged manifestation through that individual. Returning back into his physical body that was guarded for him, he is as if he were born again. That is why in the Orient such individuals in symbolism have been called dvijas, twice born. The first time they were born from their mother, physically. The second time is their new birth into the same body and in that greater state of consciousness. They are twice born, a symbolic way of speaking of it. Now there may be a long period of time of work and dedication and activity that belongs to that category of men, and some of them are women, but eventually, maybe next life, next incarnation, maybe several incarnations hence, that individual is ready to undertake some greater trials, achieve a still greater knowledge, learn a great deal more that he was not yet able to master. So he goes through another initiatory rite, and that would be the one corresponding to the spring equinox, because he has reached adolescence, symbolically speaking. He's an adolescent.